Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Jessamine Jempson, and on this episode of Breaking Doctrine, we'll be talking about deception and how Army commanders and organizations can still leverage this traditional military activity through joint and service capabilities to achieve that tactical advantage on a progressively more transparent and lethal battlefield. Our guest today is Colonel Bradley Loudon. As the director of the Force Modernization Proponent Center, Colonel Loudon also serves as the chief of the Army IO Functional Area, FA-30, the Army Deception Proponent, and the Operations Security Proponent. Thanks for being on our show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
To get us started, Colonel Loudon, sir, could you please tell our listeners a little bit about your career and your specific role in managing the Army's Deception Proponent?
Yeah, sure. I started off as an armor officer, so did that for about my first 8 years in the Army. Got a real good think foundation in terms of operations itself. About 2007-08, I made the transition over to FA-30 IO officer. As a IO officer, we are very well versed with deception. It's a component of our education. We, by doctrine, serve as military deception officers at both in the Army and in the Joint Force. And we also are skilled OPSEC practitioners as well. It's a component of our PME as well. In my current role as the FMPC director, I'm responsible for the proponencies of both, well, all three, really, OPSEC, deception, and IO. Previous to that, I was the director of the Joint Information School at the Joint Forces Staff College. That's really the joint schoolhouse for all joint IO. Previous to that, went to National War College. And some of my other previous assignments, you know, outside of being an IO officer, I served at the Pentagon in HQDA G357, served there from 2012 to 15. And really, I was there at really pretty, I think, a fortuitous time because I really was involved with standing up the Cyber Mission Force, the 17 branch cyberspace operations, and the establishment of Cyber Center of Excellence as well at Fort Eisenhower. I think a pretty wide swath of experience in terms of IO at really all echelons, from the service level down to the tactical level. So that's me in a nutshell.
It sounds like your career, these transitions that you had and the opportunities that you had to see the Army change, you just were in the right place at the right moment.
Yeah, I think I've been lucky in that regard, whether it was my time at HQDA or the commanders I worked for when I was in Iraq. You know, I've always been lucky or fortunate in terms of not only who I worked for, but the people I worked with and the things I was involved in trying to get after. So,
sir, so let's jump into our discussion today and talk about how the Army views deception and its role in the modern battle space. You know, there's a lot of talk about transformation these days. From a doctrinal perspective, and at what echelons or for what purpose do you think deception is an appropriate tool for our commanders to have in their kit bags?
Yeah, well, first off, you know, I really want to thank you and CAD for hosting us and giving us the opportunity to speak about deception. I always love to speak about deception. It's really a passion of mine. But to answer your question really in the macro sense, I would point to Sun Tzu, who really said, warfare is deception. That's what Sun Tzu was saying. So, and if you think about that notion in terms of what we do, it really starts to resonate really more and more. I mean, just look at the uniform you wear. I mean, why is it camouflaged? You know, look at our most basic forms of maneuver. Like, why do we set up a support by fire? It's to fix the enemy so we can maneuver another force to hit him in his flank. So, you know, fundamentally, whether we acknowledge it or consciously are aware of it or not, deception is an enduring element of warfare itself. Now, that said, tactical deception planning and execution are primarily designed to be conducted at echelons, brigade and above.
Sir, I'll just jump in here to define tactical deception for our listeners. In FM3 Tech 13.4, it's defined as an activity planned and executed by and in support of those tactical level commanders to cause enemy decision makers to take actions or inactions that are prejudicial to themselves and favorable to the achievement of tactical commanders' objectives.
That said, you know, that does not necessarily mean that like subordinated units such as battalions and companies would not be involved in terms of execution, whether witting or unwitting. And like in terms of deception, when we're talking about witting and unwitting, we're talking about, are they privy to the plan itself? So like as a commander, this is part of the art. So like if I want someone to do a feint, if I want them to sell it, would it not be better if I told them to do a movement to contact vice a feint? Because a movement to contact, they're more committed. They're probably, they're attuned to like what's going on a little bit more. So they may sell it better. So at the end of the day, deception is always viewed in, from the lens of the enemy commander. We've got to make it credible, believable to them. Yeah, in terms of it being a tool for commanders, you know, it's absolutely an invaluable tool. It's been a tool that's been used as long as warfare itself. Deception is part, is an element of the nature of war. And if you really think about deception, it's an art at its core. Sure, there's a science behind it. We have a methodology for coming up with deception plans. But really, the implementation aspects of deception are largely art. How are you going to deceive your counterpart? You know, that's a question commanders have been asking themselves throughout history. The historian Barton Whaley, who, like, you know, many in the deception community really consider one of our luminaries on deception, he conducted a study that assessed 168 historical battles ranging from the First World War to the Sinai War. And what he found was that in instances where commanders employed deception, they had at least an 80% chance of achieving surprise. And in those instances where commanders were able to achieve surprise, that resulted in a 5 times more favorable casualty ratio for the side that was able to achieve the surprise. Really, you know, fundamentally, that underscores everything in FM 390, which emphasizes the criticality of surprise. Because as those numbers attest to, they can be decisive.
Well, and I think when we look at maybe some of the personnel strength of our acute and our pacing threat, just the sheer volume of personnel that they have, we have to be creative about how we employ our force because we cannot match them.
Yeah. And so that goes back to making it credible and believable. Deception is always predicated on a commander's willingness to invest in the activity. You know, deception itself is a relatively low-cost, high-reward enterprise, but we have to have commanders that are willing to accept those costs. And sometimes that can hurt, you know, because you're bleeding off combat power to tell a story that may or may not yield results. So I think at the end of the day, where we need to get to in terms of deception, that's why it's important to have this start getting inculcated into our PME. So we have commanders that, one, understand the tool and the activity, but two, not just commanders, but staffs understand the planning considerations and unique requirements of deception. You know, we need to get to a point where this is normalized. And that's really one of the reasons why back in 2019, we released, and when I say we, I'm talking the deception proponent here at Fort Leavenworth, released FM313.4, which is Army support to military deception. And we released that in an unclass manner. And we did so really to get this activity that has been always been done, but has been done behind closed doors. You know, we wanted to get the conversation out in the open. And I think what we're seeing today with, you know, a lot of our Army senior leaders talking about that, you know, that conversation is out in the open now. And so that's where it needs to be to get the buy-in we need to, you know, keep up with our adversaries and put our adversaries at disadvantages, because that's really what fundamentally deception is about. It's creating multiple dilemmas that enemy commanders and staffs have to account for, and it obscures our real intent and our desired COAs.
Sir, you mentioned earlier that the majority of deception planning and execution is done at echelons, brigade, and above. What would you say for those subordinate echelons, for their education, for their implementation of deception? What do we need them to understand or do more often at warfighter exercises or training center rotations to get this into their kit bag also?
Yeah, well, you know, fundamentally, we need reps and sets on it, but we need to have people that are grounded in an understanding of deception. You know, going back to the credible and believable part, you know, you have to understand and take into account the enemy and, you know, what the enemy's thinking. And to do so, you've got to have an understanding and appreciation of enemy or adversary, C2 processes, systems and capabilities that they're leveraging to sense the battlefield. Like when we're simply think about it in terms of like where we're emplacing things on the battlefield. If say we're going to put decoys out there, you know, where are we putting those decoys? Emplacement of those need to follow in line with where we would place the real thing. If you think about it from an enemy collection standpoint, you know, and his ISR plan, he's looking at certain spots. And so if our decoys are not where he thinks they may be, is that believable and credible? So that goes back to the point of having people on staff that understand, you know, those deception planning considerations and the importance of that. But, you know, at the end of the day, deception is a combined arms activity. It really is a multidisciplinary, you know, pull that really requires the whole staff to come together. It's not just like, you know, the IO person or the 39 who's the MDO, the military deception officer, you know, running the plan. He or she needs to have the whole team pull together to get all those inputs to really get it to the point where it's credible and believable, you know, the enemy or adversary.
Sir, what do you think it is about our current operating environment and the adversaries that we're talking about that makes deception different now or different for the next battle, the next war, than, say, what we've seen in the last 20 years?
Yeah, well, first off, I would say the fundamentals are enduring. You know, this is fundamentally about human beings making decisions, good or bad, based on the information, intelligence available to them at the time. Now, that said, the multi-domain context of the modern battlefield presents a variety of factors that really we need to account for. The proliferation of technology and mass communications make the amount of information and data available to a commander and their staffs, you know, simply vast and in some cases overwhelming. The fight for information, you know, really has turned more into a fight to filter through all that available information on hand to translate that information into actionable intelligence. You know, the number of battlefield sensors, and I think you're seeing that in Ukraine with the proliferation of UASs like all over the place, you know, really also challenges us in terms of concealing our forces. Quite simply, land forces in a LISCO type fight will always be almost under constant observation or ubiquitous observation. And as we've seen in Ukraine, you know, detection almost is tantamount to destruction. So if you're seen, you're dead. So we've got to fight through that. One of the other important elements is really the, you know, the proliferation of AI and automated decision making on the battlefield. And from a deception standpoint, you know, that really presents some interesting dynamics in terms of, you know, how we deceive in that context. You know, we will certainly, most certainly, those systems are vulnerable to deception, but that deception may look different than deception against a human target. I think fundamentally the proliferation of all these technological advances is leading commanders to have more information. But the flip side of that, conversely, is also there's more conduits for deception to get into their OODA loop. So it's really a double-edged sword.
I'm glad you brought up the transparency of the battlefield, because one of the questions that I wanted to ask you was, so the 2022 operational concept that was published in FM30 discusses 9 imperatives. And for our listeners, an imperative is defined as an action that Army forces must take to defeat peer enemy forces and succeed in that multi-domain operational environment we've been talking about. One of those 9 imperatives is that our forces must account for being under constant enemy observation, which we've kind of been talking about already. So do you think that the technological advances and the near transparency of the battle space makes deception or maybe tactical deception more difficult or even obsolete?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And it's a question that I get fielded quite often and have for some time. And you know, what I would say is quite simply that notion is a widely held misconception. You know, I think this is really us falling victim to a case of recency bias, and where we simply refuse to acknowledge that with all of our technological tools available to us, that we could possibly be deceived. Well, let me tell you, you can. And our enemies most certainly are going to try. And our adversaries, enemies would like nothing more than for us to have that blind spot. We just cannot allow that to happen. You know, a great recent example that completely obliterates, you know, that notion is Gaza. If you look at Gaza, it's arguably one of the most surveilled pieces of real estate on the planet. Yet Hamas, a non-state actor, by the way, yeah, was able to achieve overwhelming surprise against one of the most advanced Western militaries, Israel. How were they able to do that? Also look at Ukraine, both 2014 and more recently, what went wrong with the Russian incursion into Ukraine? And what went right, what went wrong? For on the Ukrainian side, you know, look at the 2022 Kharkov counteroffensive. That was deception, and it was overwhelmingly successful. And more recently, you know, their counteroffensive into Kursk, or their offensive into Kursk. Those are great examples of deception working. But we shouldn't just look at, like, success cases and learn lessons from those. We should also look at their failures. So comparatively, you know, I alluded to it earlier, you know, 2014 versus when the Russians went back in. They used the same playbook. The first time it worked, the second time it didn't. It's because Western intel knew the playbook. And I think the Biden administration did a good job of getting out and leading our NATO allies to really call the Russians out. You look at the Ukrainians in terms of their 2023 counteroffensive in the South and why that failed. That's a great example of the importance of OPSEC relative to deception. If the enemy knows what you're going to be doing beforehand, you're probably going to have a bad day at the office. And the Ukrainians certainly learned a lesson from that. And so when they recently did their Kursk offensive, they maintained very strict OPSEC. And so that's why they were able to achieve overwhelming surprise, at least initially.
It's important to remember that OPSEC is a joint term that applies to all of our services. JP3 Tech 13.3 defines operations security as a capability that identifies and controls critical information, indicators of friendly force actions attendant to military operations, and incorporates countermeasures to reduce the risk of an adversary exploiting vulnerabilities. So, sir, I want to ask you about transparency. I came across this saying that transparency does not necessarily equal understanding. I think there's room here to, one, create misleading observables, and two, to not automatically assume that we understand what we observe.
Yeah. And if you look at, and I can explain a little bit more, but, you know, one of the key components of, you know, how we're viewing deception, you know, it starts with understanding the enemy. And I've talked to it a little bit about understanding their processes and, you know, their capabilities and their operating concepts and processes and all that. But, you know, fundamentally, it's about understanding their cultural mindset. So, like, to your notion about, you know, transparency doesn't always equal understanding, you know, we have to understand that we look at things inevitably through an American Western lens. And that lens may be different than our counterparts. You know, culturally, you know, their values and like how they're raised and how they make decisions is fundamentally, you know, in some cases different than how we do, than how we make decisions. So we have to understand that. That's why, like, to me, like, in terms of deception, like having a good, like, red team type, you know, element within your staff is absolutely important. And if you don't have that, you know, having cultural advisors, you know, people that understand the context of that experience that enemy commander and his staff lived through. Fundamentally, this is about psychology. And if we don't understand our enemy, you know, how can we hope to possibly alter their behaviors? So I'm not trying to get all philosophical, but like I've seen this work is having that type of, you know, expertise available to you and certainly factored into your planning efforts. So that is not something we can necessarily replicate in PME at scale, but, you know, having singular people that are able to provide that, whether it's in the IC or on staff, those are invaluable pieces that we have to try to leverage when and where available.
Let's talk about transforming in contact. Can you talk to our listeners a little bit about how your proponents are innovating?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question, certainly a timely question. I think, you know, fundamentally, we're all about trying to grow this activity across the Army. And there's a lot of interest in it right now. And so we've worked, I think, quite diligently with, you know, stakeholders from across the Army and really soliciting input from the field in terms of what the current gaps and what the current needs are. And I think that is starting to resonate. And that is really starting to drive some of the .mil PF components that have largely been neglected over the last, you know, 20 to 30 years. And it's really re-energizing and revitalizing a lot of those efforts. You know, that includes like linking in with training units, you know, getting units reps and sets at the CTCs on some of these capabilities, you know, soliciting input from corps and divisions in terms of what, and ASCCs as to what they need and what the threat looks like out there. You know, what type of capabilities do we need in response to that? You know, all of that stuff is transforming in contact because, you know, in this space, in the information dimension, it's different than the physical dimension of the operating environment because in this dimension, you know, we're in continuous contact. So, you know, we are perpetually subject to deceptive activities by our near peer competitors. So we have to be attuned to that. You know, whether it's deception or influence or whatever, you know, we have to be attuned to the fact that really the first shots fired in the next conflict are going to be in the information dimension.
The newest form of contact is influence.
Yeah.
And we're being influenced every day, and we're influencing every day.
Well, just turn on the news, you know, and in outside a military context, you're constantly inundated with people trying to influence your end behavior, right?
And your family.
Everything. Pick up your phone. We in a modern sense, are subject to influence in pretty much everything we do. And because we live in that digital age, we've got to be cognizant of it. I think one of the fundamental challenges with deception is I think people are a lot more skeptical, at least from a Western perspective, a lot more skeptical in terms of the inputs they receive. Now, that's good for us. That's good for our allies. You know, that might not necessarily be true, like, in China or Russia that have very or North Korea, that have very controlled information dimensions and top-down fed information to their citizens, where they're absolutely taught to trust authority. So that may be good news for us. I'm just throwing that out there.
Sir, I want to ask you about our collective approach to deception. And I kind of see this question in two parts. First is the Army's role, and then the second part is the joint fight and how those are nested.
Yeah, so another great question. And I think this is really understanding the demarcation line between, you know, service-specific tactical deception and, you know, what that is and the difference between that and joint MILDEC is important.
Let me clarify this for our listeners. Military deception, also known as MILDEC, are actions executed to deliberately mislead adversary military, paramilitary, or violent extremist organization decision makers, thereby causing the adversary to take specific actions or inactions that contribute to the accomplishment of the friendly mission. MILDEC is conducted at the joint level, whereas tactical deception is Army-specific.
That's why it's important to have trained military deception officers that understand the differences, because joint MILDEC authorities are specific activities that are directed and can only be executed under those authorities. That is not something that the services can do unilaterally. I'm not going to necessarily get into the classified sense of what those named activities are. But in terms of tactical deception, you know, that's the inherent right of every service within their specific domain to be able to conduct tactical deceptions, whether that's in the form of maneuver for us, like in terms of feints or demonstrations or false fires, false air insertions, false wet gaps. You know, that is something that should always be available to an Army commander. We should not have to go to the joint force to request permission to do that. No, that is part of, how the Army fights. That is what we do. And, you know, our commanders absolutely have the unassailable right to conduct those as necessary. So, you know, really at the end of the day, that's what we're talking about. Those type of activities available, you know, the use of decoys to enhance survivability and really impose cost on the enemy. Because if he's expending rounds on decoys and having to do the intel analysis to differentiate targeting, you know, that's imposing a cost. And so, yeah, like all those things, like that really encapsulates, I think, tactical deception. And those people that are interested in it, what I would encourage you to do is pick up, you know, FM313.4. You know, again, we released it unclassed to get the word out there and to get people to start understanding that. You know, you don't have to come to one of our deception courses to understand deception. You can just pick up the manual and you'll get the fundamentals. You'll get the basic blocking and tackling in terms of deception.
Well, okay, so since you mentioned the course, understanding that not everybody needs to attend it, you can get a lot of what you'd need from the field manual. But let's talk a little bit about the ASI and some of the training and education that's available for your current or future MDOs.
Yeah, so, you know, by doctrine, the IO officer or PSYOP officer is typically serves as an MDO. I think in how that plays out is mostly in the conventional force, you see an IO officer, namely in the 39 at division or above, serving in that MDO role. And really in the sophomore missions, I think you see the PSYOP officers. So for an IO officer, as I alluded to, they become MDO, well, they get the education portion of the ASI to hotel taken care of when they do our IO qualification course. Now, you know, that ASI has an educational requirement and an experiential requirement. So you've got to have both. So the Joint Force has the Joint Military Deception Training Course, JMTC, that's conducted at the Joint Forces Staff College. That also would get you the educational bona fides to be competitive for that ASI. But it's the education and also serving in a deception billet for a year. But really growing deception is a mindset. You know, it's bigger than just having one person on staff serving as an MDO. And, you know, as I said earlier, it's about having that multidisciplinary team across the entire staff. And, you know, we're really excited about here at Fort Leavenworth, you know, our deception proponent has stood up a new 2-week course, the Army's Deception Planners course, or ADPC, here at Fort Leavenworth. And that's really designed not for the MDOs, but that's for the planners, the other people on staff, whether it's coming out of the 2 or coming out of the 3-5 or the 5. It's those people coming in and getting versed on deception. Deception planning is done in parallel with, you know, our MDMP. So they are parallel planning, and they should be doing it in concert with one another. So it's important to have people in the G or J5 that understand that. Those OPT leads better be versed in deception. So, and then having your intel professionals that can feed you the intel that drives the plan, you know, that's important. So having intel people that understand that, can account for that, like in the ISR plans, in terms of the intel requirements that inform the ISR plan, that's important. Like I was saying, it really requires that multidisciplinary team. And this is what that 2-week course is designed to do. And it's really growing the activity, making deception more available to the Army itself, not just some specialized skill set that, you know, largely resides with the IO or the PSYOP communities. No, this is about like growing the brand and making this, normalized for the rest of the Army.
I appreciate the comment about MDMP and the parallel planning. I think so many organizations are pressed for time, and MDMP is, you know, it's not either it's done behind closed doors with a select few, and there are so many afterthoughts. Mm. And like you said, this is a combined arms endeavor, and we have to have the right people together throughout the planning process to get it right.
Yeah. And really, you know, this type of activity, which really, you know, designed to go after decision makers, and you have to have an intimate knowledge of decision makers, and that requires a heavy intel pull. So this activity done in isolation is not going to be successful. To do this and consistently do this well, you know, it really requires that multidisciplinary team from across the entire staff.
So, sir, if we're thinking about practicing deception with a multi-domain mindset and like really focusing on the combined arms aspect of this, yeah, not just within our Army components, but expanding that to the joint force, what would you recommend to Army commanders that they understand about joint MILDEC?
Yeah, well, first off, in terms of multi-domain operations, what I would say is that's inherently a joint enterprise. And when we're talking multi-domain operations, we very much are going to fight as a purple force, leveraging capabilities from all the services. I think in terms of deception, how that plays out, this is really the complementary aspects of tactical deception and joint MILDEC in support of one another, and how that can work out. And I think that's why it's important to have like trained MDOs that can account for that and bring those capabilities and authorities required for the commander. You know, this is really, when we're talking about joint MILDEC, this is really bringing some of our most strategic assets into play on the tactical battlefield. So, but we have to understand, when we're talking about that type of stuff, we have to understand not only planning considerations to employ that type of capability, but also planning horizons. So if we're talking about some exquisite widget that may or may not be in our AOR, that the planning timeline for that may be different than something that is service retained. Having someone that understands all of that, and having JAG officers that understand the legal considerations for all of that, is very important for commanders to understand.
That's an excellent point. Sir, I'm going to switch gears, because you're also managing the Army's OPSEC proponent. For our listeners who, you know, haven't studied this, may are not as familiar, can you explain the linkage between OPSEC and deception?
Yeah, so like I always say, they have a symbiotic relationship. And at least in terms of deception, you can't have deception without OPSEC. Now, you can probably have OPSEC without deception, but deception fundamentally is about showing the false and hiding the real. And really hiding the real is the OPSEC component of that. Denial, deception, these are fundamentally inextricably linked with one another in terms of deception. So as I alluded to earlier, in terms of some of the failures like we've seen recently on the battlefield, like and why they failed, I brought up the 2023 spring offensive by the Ukrainians in the South, and why that failed is because, from at least from the Ukrainians' perspective, they told all their NATO partners what they were going to do. And they assessed that got back to FSB, and the Russians were cued in with what was going on. So, you know, fast forward to the Kursk offensive, and guess what? They only told a few local commanders what was going to go on. And it wasn't, in fact, large numbers of commanders, like at a lower echelon, battalion, brigade commanders, like that were a part of that offensive initially, didn't understand they were even in Russia. Like, you know, like what's going on? Like they thought it was some sort of ruse or feint or something, but no, they didn't realize what was actually taking place because they had done such good job in terms of OPSEC, so much so that they surprised their own people. Now, that's probably an extreme example, but I think that goes, that's a good example in terms of how that dynamic plays out. Historically, if you look at some other great examples, you can look at the Egyptians and Yom Kippur. So, like, they kept OPSEC really at the national command level, and it was really kind of a whole of government enterprise. So, like, one of the indicators for the Israeli intelligence was shutting down Cairo airport. One of the indicators of a forthcoming attack, they kept the airport open. They were able to pass off built up military activity adjacent to the Suez Canal as an exercise. And that's what they were telling their people. That's often a technique that and militaries have historically used to achieve surprise, whether it's, you know, the Germans in 1941, Operation Barbarossa. How do you conceal the buildup of 2 million Axis troops on Russia's western borders? They passed it off as exercises, and guess what? Stalin believed them. But fast forward, look at the most recent invasion into Ukraine. And it was under the guise of exercises taking place in Belarus. And we know that not to be the case. So,
sir, as we wrap up, do you have any final words of wisdom or advice for our listeners?
Well, you know, yeah, and I'd have to say, I mean, it's really reiterating a lot of the same points I've made, but, you know, deception is very much just as important today as it has been throughout history. You know, history is replete with examples of deception being successfully utilized for decisive result and will continue to be so in the future.
Sir, I want to thank you for taking the time to come out and speak with us today. For our listeners, I also think it's important to note that Army deception is a sensitive topic, and this podcast has been given special attention to ensure that the entire discussion that we've had today is appropriate for public release. Just like writing New Doctrine is a team effort, Breaking Doctrine takes a team. Without the Special Doctrine Division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. You can subscribe on Amazon Music, Apple, Odyssey, Audible, Spotify, or YouTube. Please follow us on social media at US Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the United States Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Jessamine Jempson, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.